no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Manuke, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mendel. We're here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets Edmonton Oilers playoff series. The Jets, of course, winning the first two games in Edmonton last night's contest by that 1-0 overtime victory, sending Jets fans all throughout the province and anywhere they might be tuning in from into a state of jubilation. Dave, before we begin, I have to say I can't see your fire, so I'm a little bit off-put immediately with today's show. Is it still going? Okay, the fire is still there. I just could see the sort of the wall behind you, and I was a little bit troubled deep inside that your head wasn't on fire, because that's the Winnipeg Jets, the analogy for the Winnipeg Jets right now, on fuego, on fire, winning the first two games of this playoff series in Edmonton, games 3 and 4, of course, tomorrow night and Monday night back here in Winnipeg. Nice to see you, gentlemen. It has been a whole whopping 8 hours since we last gazed eyes upon each other.
Yeah, all good, boys. Hold on a second. I'm just going to take a sip of coffee here. Okay. Yeah, good morning. Good to be back. As you said, Drew, it seems
Why did you just do that? Like, I thought there was a joke coming there. Instead, you just actually took a sip of coffee.
I actually thought the coffee cup was the joke. Like, I was expecting something on the coffee cup that would be significant, hence the reason as he felt the need to announce that he was drinking a sip of coffee.
No punchline, boys. I was thirsty, and I needed a little jolt of caffeine there. But you can sense how excited Jets fans are in the chat right now. Good to see everybody back. Lots of folks joining us again from last night. As we talked about, we got off air around I believe it was around 12:30. So hopefully everybody got at least a few hours sleep. But what an incredible position, boys, for the Jets to be in, coming home up 2-0. And when you think about how the Jets have won these two games, and I thought Connor Hellebuck, I forget if it was Hellebuck or Wheeler, I think it was Wheeler, actually, now that I think about it, he said it's just our time, right? And I think when you consider how well the Jets have played defensively for big stretches, sure, the Oilers have had their chances, guys. The high danger chances, I think they had one or two more at even strength than they did in game one, but not a lot of odd man rushes. A lot of those are coming from the outside. So, when you talk about, collapsing in front of Hellebuck and keeping shots to the outside, I think the Jets have done a really good job of that. Look at Dylan DeMello was basically, willing to take a puck off of any part of his body in order to keep that puck out of the net. And Hellebuck talked about that after the game. Our friend Carter Brooks of Game On Magazine asked Bucky about that. So, Hellebuck was amazing. This Jets team, I think, is just so confident right now. That's funny, C-Mac. Absolutely. Dramatic Effect Workshop is definitely, something that I just graduated from. But you know what I mean, guys? Like, good morning, Rowdy, as well. Good to see that you're tuning in live from the Netherlands. But this Jets team, you could feel it. You could really feel it. Marat Ates of The Athletic asked Wheeler and Hellebuck about that. And how could you not be, boys? Like, you lose seven of nine games, during the regular season. And now you're up 2-0 on the team, that had a pretty healthy lead over you, in the standings to end the regular season, right, Dave? So, you have to be very confident. You have to be feeling really good. And obviously, the Oilers are going to be even more desperate, Dave, in game three than they were in game two. But, right now the Jets are in the driver's seat.
I think it's a classic case of you have to not start to read your own press clippings at this point if you're the Winnipeg Jets. You've played well. You have a 2-0 lead, which is exactly where you want to be. The team buy-in is at an all-time high in terms of the way they're playing as a group, and that's significant. That's not to be understated, because that was the one thing we were not seeing. And again, it's not just us. A lot of people in the chat have been saying this. The players themselves, Paul Stastny talks about that idea of not playing as individuals, and we're seeing it. And that's, again, the Oilers are still getting the chances, but what did we say throughout the course of the season and in the playoffs is Connor Hellebuyck will be a difference maker. And Connor Hellebuyck has been a difference maker. And I think as long as Connor Hellebuyck is going to be like this, and the Jets are going to have this collective will to play in this way, I think that the Jets are in a position to continue this role. And it's really hard to see that, look, the Oilers are going to get their chances. But what were we all saying after game one, especially when they loaded up Dreisaitl and McDavid for game two? And we saw stats that said Mike McDavid and Dreisaitl after game, they'd been held off the score sheet, feasted on the team that they were playing against. Mm-hmm. But we saw a Jets team that, you know, were in, like I said, playing in harmony with each other. And when one guy dropped, another guy stepped up, and it was just a good game, solid effort. You know, guys like Dylan DeMello blocking shots with his hand, coming back. The Tucker Pullman, Logan Stanley pairing has looked good. And we've talked about that. You know, they had 29 games in 2018-19 with the Matsuo Moose, so they've got a lot of familiarity together. And they've, when you put Tucker Pullman in a role where he's going to have success, he looks pretty damn good in the third pairing role, right? And when you're not expecting him to go up against the top guys each and every shift. And so I think the Jets have really bought in. I think that's the key, right? That was a, you know, you saw this losing streak. And again, we said this, the losing streak isn't as bad as it looks, but it's still bad. You know, when you've lost that many games in a row, it's never a good thing. But it allowed this team to kind of reset itself, knowing that they were already a playoff team, and work on those fundamentals. And we didn't know that they were going to be able to do this. That there wasn't a tremendous amount of faith. I thought the Jets could beat the Oilers, as did Ez, but the truth is,
just for the record, it's not that I didn't think it was possible for the Jets to beat the Oilers. I just thought that in the course of a 7-game series, the Oilers would defeat the Jets.
Drew, you know, like, Dave's going to rub that in as much as
I know
can,
he
right?
is. I just want to make sure I put it on the record.
I admitted you, Drew. I didn't say anything about your...
But I could see the little...
Dave and I are obviously geniuses. That's clear.
I could see the little grin on your face, so I just felt the need to jump in and say, look, I thought it was going to be a close series, and it still very well might be a close series. So making it sound like I didn't think the Jets had a snowball's chance in hell,
I think
it's a little bit overstated.
If you wouldn't have interrupted me, what I was going to say is, and Drew, I know based on the comments you've made that you feel the Jets are obviously capable of winning this series. You didn't let me get it in there. Uh-huh. I wasn't taking a shot at you, Drew.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, all right, I'll finish my point there. I think that was an extended point, so go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, you talk about the buy-in, and you talk about the commitment in all zones, especially the defensive zone for the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, you know, Mark Scheifele, I know it's only two games, but Mark Scheifele has 6 blocks in those two games. Blake Wheeler, 3 blocks. I mean, you know, these guys are sacrificing themselves in a manner that we haven't seen them sacrifice, or you know, they're committing to the defensive side of the game, you know, way more than we've ever seen them do so, and way more than, I'll be honest, I was, you know, I wasn't sure the Jets, you know, especially the top line of the Jets, sort of had this commitment to defense in them. Now, it's only two games, and two games does not, you know, change a narrative, but, you know, for the Jets to continue to succeed, they, you know, Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor, you know, after these two games, they're going to say, look, we've won. We've done what we need to do in the defensive side of the game. It hasn't, you know, we haven't obviously dominated offensively, but we're still winning and we're still succeeding. So every time Scheifele back checks and steals the puck and turns it around the other way, and it leads to a, if not a scoring opportunity, then some zone time in the offensive zone, that will help him to continue to buy in to what's necessary to do to win in the playoffs. And that is the 5-man unit, and that is the back checking, and that is the commitment to your own zone before you can get into the offensive zone. And that's what we've seen so far from the Winnipeg Jets, you know, in this series, is that commitment in their own zone first, and then it all, you know, it all carries over after that.
Absolutely, Drew. And I also, like, Daniel Nugent-Bowman wrote about this in The Athletic, and I think he, you know, nailed it on the head. I think what we're seeing is, you know, the Jets' bottom six forwards have the edge over the Oilers' bottom six forwards, and the Oilers, and forget that, the Oilers just don't have the scoring depth I think to make up for the fact that Draisaitl and McDavid are being shut down. And Daniel Nugent-Bowman, you know, mentioned this in his column today in The Athletic, you know, that aside from, you know, maybe putting in Tyler Ennis, like the Oilers don't have that many options to go into the lineup right now. They're just not as deep as, you know, as, say, a team like the Leafs, who, you know, when John Tavares goes out, you know, they're able to put in, you know, an Alex Galchenyuk on the second line, which is the expectation, right? He's played there before. So, you know, the Jets have done an excellent job of not only shutting down Draisaitl and McDavid, but they've shut down the rest of the team. And that's what we talked about, right? Like, if you're able to shut down those two guys, it's not like a Tampa Bay Lightning or it's not like a Boston Bruins, right, that have like a Charlie Coyle or a Louis DeBrusk. Pardon me, a Jake DeBrusk. So I think that's been a huge thing in this series too. Like Morris, whether it's Morrissey and DeMello out there with the Scheifele line, or you know whether it's Pionk and Forsberg out there with the Dubois line, I think what you're seeing is, you know, if you're able to shut those guys down, it's much easier to shut down, you know, the Zach Cassians and, you know, sure, it's much easier to shut out, you know, those depth players, the Zuzhar Karas. Karas is a good player. He's a good physical player, but he's not a guy that you expect to lead the Oilers offensively. So I think that's also something that, you know, needs to be mentioned here, that, you know, the Jets bottom six, I think, is having a bigger impact in this series.
Well, look at the, you know, obviously the Jets played game one without Dubois and Ehlers, and game two without Ehlers still. And, you know, we'll find out obviously tomorrow, if not before then, if Ehlers is back for game three. But, you know, look at the guys that they put into the lineup. They succeeded. You know, Dominic Toninato obviously getting the game-winning goal in game one. Christian Vesalainen, who played game one but not game two, you know, he was dangerous in game one. To your point, Ezzy, about the Oilers' options to try and juice their bottom of their lineup, they just don't really have anybody besides sort of throwing a dart at the dartboard and hoping that you get a bullseye. I mean, you know, Tyler Ennis is not going to, you know, Tyler Ennis is in their lineup. The Jets aren't all of a sudden going to say, guys, the key to this game is really shutting down Tyler Ennis. And that's no disrespect to him. That's just the reality of the situation for the Oilers, is that Tyler Ennis is a fringe hockey player. And, you know, the other guy they were talking about on the back end, I think Caleb Jones maybe coming in on the back end for a guy like, you know, to change up some things on their defense.
It would be probably, my best guess would be, it would be for sure either Kulikov or Ethan Bear. But I think it would be
Slater Kukuk.
Or it could be Slater Kukuk. You're right. Actually, you are right, Drew.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I don't think that, you know, Kukuk's played poorly. That's to our point. Not like, look at, I mean, the Oilers, I think, and, you know, as we talk about, you know, the depth, we're going to talk about that through the show. That has always been the Achilles heel of the Oilers, in addition to goaltending, which obviously, you know, hasn't been the issue. Smith's only allowed 3 goals in 2 games. It just so happens that, you know, the goal that he let in last night in overtime, that was a weak one. And we talked about it on the post game show. You got to have that. Even if there's a screen there, Dave, you got to have that. But the Oilers' weakness has been, they live and die by McDavid and Draisaitl, and to a lesser extent, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but it's really Draisaitl and McDavid. And I think Drew made a really good point. If Dave Tippett is going to continue to play, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl 26, 27, 28 minutes a night, these guys are going to tire down, and that's going to be an advantage for the Jets.
Especially on the back-to-back, Dave. You know, with Sunday, Monday, you had a back-to-back. So if he chooses – now, my prediction, and obviously time will tell on this one, I think he splits McDavid and Draisaitl up for tomorrow night's game.
I think so too, Drew.
I just didn't see – I mean, the what it does to the other three lines by not having them – by having them together is it almost makes them – not meaningless, but it mitigates their impact so dramatically, as opposed to splitting them up where you do really get a quality top six when they're not playing together. That being said, I mean, look, if you play them 30 minutes a game, and, you know, the game went 4 minutes into overtime, so it wasn't like it was the overtime that juiced the numbers dramatically in terms of the time on ice. If you play them 30 minutes a game and you're playing, you know, your third game in 4 nights, just, you know, no matter how great shape you're in, you're going to have some mental fatigue and you're going to have some physical fatigue. And that plays into the Jets' strength with their depth and with the Jets' ability to run the four lines like they did last night, where I think, what did they say in the postgame show? Scheifele led the Jets forward group, and it was only like 23 minutes, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's not significant ice time as opposed to playing 30, 32 minutes like Dreisaitl and McDavid were playing, albeit a lot of that, of course, power play time, but it's not like Scheifele doesn't get a whole a big chunk of power play time just the same. Dave?
Yeah, I mean...
That's a great comment from Brian, by the way. That a boy.
and your daughter's Brian, right. I was going to say, his daughter's right. We don't really have a lot to say. I mean, Eddie and I, our post-game show, our wrap-up show, still lasted another 10, 15 minutes afterwards.
You guys are insane. You guys are absolutely insane. These two guys, for everybody, I mean, this isn't broadcast for obvious reasons, but after we end, Dave and Ezzy just keep going. They just keep going. I'm like, peace out, guys. I'll see you again in, 7.5 hours. It's bedtime.
And it's like on Stern. It's the after show. It's the wrap-up show.
Yeah, but Howard, you're right. You're right, because I'm Howard Stern, and I'm not on the wrap-up show. Well, you guys are Gary and John Hine. So there you go. I'm the king of all Illegal Curve Media. You guys are my peons.
Oh, well. Exactly. Oh, boy.
We're your peons.
Hold on. There's one problem. The only difference is this peon can end this broadcast as we speak if you keep this rolling.
Only because I granted you that access, Mr. Manu.
Yes. Well, let's not go there. Let's just keep rolling here. Yeah. People aren't interested in our behind-the-scenes battle.
The making of the sausage.
Yeah, exactly. I think at the end of the day, Dave Tippett, I don't know. I think there was a reason why he went to that. I think that he has seen, like I said earlier in the show, he had success when he's put McDavid and Dreisaitl together after they've been shut out. But when you have a Jets team that's playing the way they are, it really is hard to envision that this is going to make a major difference when you've loaded it up like that. Because, like I said, that Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor line has held their own. We weren't certain that they were going to be able to when they went up head-to-head against McDavid, but they have. And that seems to be that collective buy-in. And I'm with people. I like James doesn't like it when the IC boys are fighting. But let me tell you, it's all a good fun, boys.
Yeah, we don't actually ever fight.
Yeah. So I think this is just all good.
We don't fight because I would mop the floor with these guys. That's why we don't fight.
Well, I don't know. If you remember, Gary Wallace did call me the wiry one. So,
I bruise like a peach.
And one of us is from the North End, unlike you two soft South End.
And then you eat a peach.
Yeah.
I bruise like a peach, and then I eat the peach. That's exactly how it works.
So, look, I think that this is – the back-to-back definitely plays is going to be a factor, Drew. I think that, when you're running those guys harder – and look, credit to Paul Maurice. What did we say when the – I think it was the first three games of the season, Mark Scheifele had played 26 minutes in one of the games, and we had said this is kind of cuckoo because – not player cuckoo, but this is actually just kind of cuckoo because I think you've got a situation where you don't have you don't want to burn him out, especially in a condensed season. I like Tico Napoli. Thank you, Tico Napoli. So the point is you didn't want to burn any of these guys out. And when you have faith that the fourth line is going to get burned, the fourth lines look good, right? They've, like as you said, that Dominic Condonato contributed a game-winning goal. I was funny yesterday. I said in the game, Lewis and Thompson threw great inadvertent hits. Neither one realized they were going to get hit. We're going to throw a hit. They got hit, but they're such big boys that they ended up like knocking the Oilers down. But this is the team collectively. It just comes down to buy-in, and that's to me is what you're seeing. These games aren't blowouts. It's not like as if they're complete domination. But when you have Connor Hellebuyck, who's in the zone and is one of the best goalies in the NHL. And you have a Jets team that's willing to play defense and be opportunistic for their offense. I mean, great who said it? Mark Sports Video said it, and I agree with him. The reality is that Tucker Pullman made a hell of a play on that overtime goal to under pressure, get that pass up and allow the Jets to start the rush. So there's you've got unsung heroes up and down this Jets lineup right now that are playing extremely well. And like I said, they're buying into the team game.
To your point there, Dave, and I want to say good morning to everybody. Saturday morning, 20 minutes after 9 o'clock, you are watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. But to your point about Tucker Pullman, it's taken a while this year. It's taken a bewilderingly long time, easy for me to say, finally, Paul Maurice is putting his players in the position to succeed. Tucker Poolman, as a third-pairing defenseman, is a lot more comfortable in that role. He's a lot more equipped for that role. He, you know, that's a role that he's suited for, that he can play well in. When he was up on the top line, it wasn't fair to him. It wasn't fair to Josh Morrissey, because Morrissey obviously is now, you know, has to try and pick up the slack. And, you know, the way Morrissey's played for the last couple of years, he doesn't strike me as a player playing with the utmost confidence that it doesn't matter who his partner is. Morrissey looks much more comfortable playing with Dylan DeMello than he did playing with Tucker Poolman. So they finally made that swap, and all of a sudden, just everybody on the Jets' back end in particular, and this, you know, the forwards certainly play a role in this as well, they just look more comfortable. They look calm, and they look like whatever is coming at them, they're prepared for it, as opposed to being, almost panicky just by default.
Right, and they've won the first two games, and they've shut down McDavid and Draisaitl without Nick Ehlers, and they did it on the road without Last Change, right? So, yeah, we do have to give credit, you know, to the team, and specifically Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, for, you know, being able to, when they can, get the matchups. Obviously, you know, not before faceoffs, but I think if Ehlers is able to come back, that's going to be a huge boost. But, you know, guys, they've proven that they can win without him. And that was something that, you know, they weren't showing towards the end of the season during that losing streak, right? Like, what were we talking about? We kept saying, well, you know, the Jets don't have Ehlers. They can't use that as an excuse. But clearly, Dave, they were missing his ability to create offense. Mm-hmm. Like, we know that he's the best play driver, you know, the best, zone entry machine. Drew's called him, tabbed him the one-man zone entry. It's true. Like, Mike Kelly has documented this, Mike Kelly, who does work for NHL Network, you know, that Ehlers is a top player in the league when it comes to zone entries. And I think, you know, they've had to adapt their game a little bit, knowing they don't have the speed and skill of Ehlers. But, I think the decision by Paul Maurice to play Dominic Tanenauta, reward him for finishing the season strong with the Moose, right, has paid off. And, you know, we mentioned this too, like, in an ideal world, boys, like, you know, Jansen Harkins is in this top 12, right? But, you know, Toninato he's earned it. He's played well, not just the goal, but, you know, when he's getting his ice time, you know, whether it's, you know, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 9 minutes, he's making the most out of it. We know that Paul Maurice can rely on Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis. I think we have to remind ourselves, guys, that Trevor Lewis joined this team on a PTO, right? Like, yeah. Trevor Lewis was a guy that we thought had a good chance of, you know, making this team. But we also thought he might be on the taxi squad. And speaking of taxi squad, that's where Toninato was. So, yeah, absolutely. This time of year, you know, the unsung heroes step up. I think Tucker Poolman has been the biggest, the nicest surprise. I would say most pleasant surprise, because, you know, Drew nailed it. And, you know, this is something we've talked about for the last, you know, month, 6 weeks. You know, Poolman looks more comfortable, and he's able to harness that offensive game. And, you know, we all know, like, I busted out the Poolman jersey after game one. He was an offensive defenseman for UND. He's obviously been more of a kind of physical defensive defenseman, but he put up good offensive numbers for UND. Like, he was a leader on that back end. So he has untapped offensive upside, right? But he obviously, when he's in more of a shutdown role, he can't use that, because obviously, you know, Morrissey's a guy, you know, that you expect to, you know, be providing a little bit more offense. So overall, after two games, there's a lot to like here. The game hasn't been perfect. I mean, there's been stretches where, you know, the Jets are getting outchanced. But I think, you know, if you're able to stick to that game and be comfortable playing in low-scoring games, and that's what the Jets are doing right now. They know that in order to win the series, in order to close it out, you know, you're going to have to win 2-1, 1-0, 3-2. And, you know, that's impressive, because as Dave mentioned earlier in the show, when the Jets were going through that losing streak, it wasn't clear if the Jets were able to play that style.
Let's welcome to the program our good friend Ken Wiebe, joins us on the show now. Kenny, obviously part of the Kenny and Rennie post game show, and you can also read his fine work at sportsnet.ca. It's over the other shoulder, Ken.
Yeah, product placement.
Your sign is. It's okay, you know, we'll get you a second sign so you know which shoulder to point over.
But you need a big one like Drew has over his head.
Yeah, you need a giant sticker covering up over your head. That's also what you're... And again, yes, Ken, on behalf of us and everybody in the chat, a happy birthday to you.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we'll keep the joke running. Drew, I feel like you do. I feel like the show, our post after show, seems like it just ended a few minutes ago, even though we went until after 2 a.m., but, you know, beautiful weekend to be alive. What else are we going to do?
We're going to get some of this. We're
at home.
Have a little coffee.
As yet, I'm not a coffee drinker, unfortunately.
He's like me. He's not a coffee drinker.
Yeah, I'm powered by internal energy only.
You know, that's an impressive thing to be powered by, because I don't know how either of you do it without coffee, because that's basically what my bloodstream has become, is just an IV drip of coffee. But that being said, it's nice to see you, Kenny, and appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. Talk about the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers, a 2-0 series lead for the Jets. And it's been done primarily on the defensive side of things, first and foremost. And, you know, Kenny, you know, we've watched this team nonstop for the last decade plus. I didn't think that this team had this kind of defensive commitment in them. Now, I knew, you know, we knew coming into the series that run and gun wasn't going to be the way to win. They weren't going to be able to be victorious, you know, by simply, you know, playing pond hockey against this Oilers team. But their commitment to defense and what we've seen through these first two games is, you know, remarkable for me from my perspective, because I just didn't see it coming, especially from the Jets' top line.
Yeah, it's been an impressive showing for sure. And as you mentioned, I think there are a lot of people that, at least through two games, would owe that top line an apology for the suggestion that they couldn't do it. Now, again, those things were based on the fact that they were outscored 10-2 at 5-on-5 play during the season. So certainly were some reasons behind those suggestions. But the top line has been excellent, but this is a full-on commitment you got. You guys are seeing it. I mean, the Jets are sending out their fourth line at times against Connor McDavid, and they're not worried about shaking them off or hustling them to the bench for a line change. So you have to give credit where credit is due. Matthew Perreault talked about it the other day. The Jets basically tossed out this game plan and have been able to execute it almost to a T. I don't think anybody on their bingo card had 0 points for Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl through two games, but there we are. I mean, that's the beauty of playoff hockey. We knew there would be some chaos at some point, but not a lot of people were predicting this type of chaos for Jets and Oilers.
Weber, what do you think that Dave Tippett can do at this point in terms of his lineup, right? Like, we know that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl were split up in the first game, but then they obviously, towards the end of the game, they were put back together, and then for the majority of game two, they were on the same line. Is that kind of the only option here for Dave Tippett, is to split, you know, the two big guns up? And is there maybe a chance that you see, you know, a Tyler Ennis come into the lineup? Because I think you would agree that, you know, Ennis isn't exactly, you know, a player that it's going to have a huge impact on the game, but it seems like, you know, splitting up Draisaitl and McDavid might be an option that goes to here in game three.
That's interesting, guys. We talked about the coaching aspect on the post-game show as well, and I don't know that you can blame Dave Tippett for putting the two best players together who had several good shifts together in game one. We know it can be problematic in terms of the rest of the lineup. I mean, this is back to when I was asking Paul Maurice about why not having Neil Pionk and Josh Morrissey together. Well, it's not what you have. It's what you leave the rest of the lineup. And to me, this isn't coaching. This is poor play from a group that has had their secondary players and complementary depth questioned at each and every turn. It has been the Oilers' weakness for quite some time. Are there some benefits to playing them separately because they have to check and they can each drive their own line? Certainly, but again, the numbers suggested that those guys would have bounced back with utmost fury. I mean, they had 26 games in the seven following games after they were both held off the score sheet together. And I think we can all agree, you know, despite all of the, you know, the talk and chatter about putting them together, they were much more dangerous together in game two than they were apart or on separate lines in game one, at least for me. No, they didn't take over and dominate the game, but Connor McDavid was much more dangerous for me in the game. What can they do? I mean, I wouldn't take Slater Cuckoo out. I think he's been very mobile. He's been activating in the rush, and he had one of the best scoring chances of the game yesterday. So I wouldn't touch him on the back end. I mean, Caleb Jones can bring a little bit more physical play, but it's not like the Jets are running them out of the rink. Yes, they have been physical at times, but the Jets aren't, they're grinding, but not in the way of racking up the hit totals like we saw Anaheim versus Winnipeg in 2015. The Jets are winning this with commitment and, you know, getting into the trenches, but this is not a slugfest by any stretch, but, you know, one player who has added a physical component. You guys know it. You've talked about him a lot. Logan Stanley is having a fantastic series. And Drew, I agree with you completely. I've been talking about Tucker Poolman. For all the folks in our chat room also saying, this guy should be sat down. No, he should be slotted in at a position where he currently belongs in the National Hockey League, which is as an effective, not just a hanger-on third-pairing defenseman, but an effective third-pairing defenseman because of his mobility. And then you have that, the secret sauce with Tucker Poolman is his mobility, getting back for retrievals and then activating on the rush at times. And of course, when he's playing against third and fourth liners, he's going to have a better opportunity to get those cleaner exits to Andrew Kopp, which started the entire play on the overtime winner. If you're under siege against the top pairing, it's tough. It's tough for all players, not just Tucker Poolman and occasionally Derek Forbert, who also probably had his single best game of the entire season yesterday. Now these players are slotted in kind of better in terms of where they're, you know, best fit. And now you're seeing some exceptional play. And the other part of that too, we're talking about defense. I mean, Dylan DeMello, not just the prayer, hallelujah, hands up, utmost desperation save of the entire contest, but his ability to slow the game down. And we know part of the reason why he was on the third pairing and not with Josh Morrissey the entire season. Part of that was the mentorship role with Logan Stanley and then at times Ville Heinola. Because he's such a smart and capable partner, he played down in the lineup. Now, did that hurt the top pairing? Yes. But I guess there was a reason for it. And now he's playing at, you know, the, for lack of a better term, coach's porn level that we heard about last year.
Ken Wiebe, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Kenny's appearance is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, Kenny, Pierre-Luc Dubois is such an interesting player to me. He talked about when I think Mike asked him in the availability yesterday about playing that meaningless game in Toronto and against Toronto, so not in Toronto, but against Toronto in that final game of the regular season where he got hurt and it cost him a week of practicing and feeling healthy. But he talked about how he doesn't just flip a switch. He needed that as a tune-up game. And what did you think of yesterday's game? And do you think he's a guy who's going to not necessarily turn it on immediately, but kind of slowly progress into that player that everybody saw in the Columbus series against the Leafs last year?
Yeah, I expect we're going to see Bubble Dubois at some point here. I thought there were some spurts yesterday, again, where he was able to have an impact in the game. No, it didn't, you know, lead directly to a ton of shots on goal, but even something as simple as beating out that icing late in the game, I think that's an important quality because you saw the engagement, you saw the burst of speed, you saw a little bit more maybe desperation in his game. I thought the other thing that we noticed about Dubois in the game yesterday was his ability to get back to doing what he was doing early in his tenure with the Jets, using his brute strength to win board battles, which is a humongous strength of his. You know, he's not this playmaking center and he's not a guy who scored 40 goals, but his all-around game is still solid. I mean, I know he's not reached the level that we expect of him or he expects of himself, but he's gone through more than any singular player in the National Hockey League this year, and I still do expect him to make a larger impact. This is a player that, once we check the receipts down the road, I think fans are going to quickly have a turn of feeling for. But there's no doubt that he needs to elevate his game. Were we expecting a hat trick a la Game 3 versus Toronto? I certainly wasn't. I mean, he was off for a week. I think that he's getting into a position where he can be an impact player. I think he's well suited with that line. But now the bigger question comes to where he goes once Nikolaj Ehlers goes into that slot, which has basically been reserved for him. Right, we were always expecting going into the playoffs the top line would be together and that it would be Kopp, Stastny, and Ehlers, which I think by all accounts has been the most consistent line in terms of two-way play this year. So does that mean, you know, Sean has been preaching for it for months now, does that mean Dubois goes where Matthew Perreault is, Well, I mean, he could, but Perreault is playing quite well in that role now as well. And, I mean, Drew, you touched on it at one point, I believe. Does Dubois dump go right down to the fourth line? I mean, it's possible, but I think it'll be very fascinating to see which way that goes. And I know you guys were asking about Ehlers, and you didn't ask me specifically, but I think Paul Maurice had a tell in his pregame availability yesterday. I think he will be in the lineup. The only possibility of holding him back will be because of the back-to-back schedule nature. But I think that he's basically been banging on the door saying, I'm ready to go, and I think the Jets will unleash him. I think the other part of it that Avco Cup had been mentioning also, and I think you guys probably as well, Paul Maurice doesn't like to put two injured players in at the same time because all of a sudden you're playing with potentially with 10 forwards if there's any reoccurrence. So now that they know Dubois got through one game, I think you will see Ehlers back in. And that dynamic nature in the top six, I think, will help even more. Though I do think the Jets took an important step in terms of offensive generation yesterday compared to game one when they were very opportunistic. And that went throughout the lineup. I think game one was, you guys were right, all about unlikely heroes. Yes, Blake Wheeler played an important role on that first goal with the initial shot and the slight, you know, hesitation to cause the confusion and commotion between Kulikov and Larson. But that line was very focused on defense in game one, and most of the offense came from the secondary scorers until the empty netters. In game two, the top six elevated their speed game, and we saw that in that's the best first period the Jets have played probably this year. They attacked the Oilers at a time where they knew the Oilers would be coming with speed at them. They attacked the Oilers, and they generated by getting to the paint and also by using their speed to create chaos in the offensive zone.
Kenny Weave, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. You know, Kenny, you mentioned Ehlers and, of course, Dubois back in the lineup. You know, you look at this Jets forward group, it'll be the first time that they'll be fully healthy as a, you know, their best, in quotes, 12-man unit among forwards in a while here. How do you think that dynamic will impact the series? I mean, they've been so committed to the defense. Obviously, that shouldn't change because they've been successful at that. But just, you know, adding that extra juice into your lineup. I mean, we're talking about the Jets getting Ehlers and Dubois back. Meanwhile, from the Oilers' perspective, as they're looking to juice their lineup, they're talking about guys like, you know, Caleb Jones on the back end and Tyler Ennis up front. I mean, it just seems like the depth was always going to be a story. It seems like it's now sort of really becoming a story at the forefront of this series.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I'm not saying Dubois will definitely be on the fourth line. It's
No, I know.
Certainly, I know you're not, but it's a couple of folks in the chat. It's something that I'm just trying to say and involve. From our own show, it's like, man, you're trying to multitask here.
Yeah.
Kenny, we're not pulling the Sean. We're not going to throw the chat, the comment there to try and throw you off. We respect you too much.
Perfect, David. Perfect.
Where's Corey?
I appreciate that. Exactly. Where is Corey? I do think that Dubois may stay with Stastny and Ehlers at the beginning, and then you could see Kopp on his normal line, if you will, and then you would see Perreault bump down where Toninato has done a nice job in that fourth line, but there's the familiarity, obviously, with those guys as well. I think the matchup game will be fascinating to watch, whether it's, you know, nuclear option round two or if it's split lines and how things shake down. And I can't get this long without, giving praise where praise is due. Josh Morrissey, who had a tough year, is playing his best hockey of the season. There's no doubt about that. We know it's been a taxing year for Josh Morrissey with a revolving door of defense partners, among other things. I think that Josh has done an excellent job in this situation with Dylan DeMello. Those two guys are doing such a smart job in terms of their puck movement and support, both of one another and in support of the puck, which can be such a taxing thing against the Oilers. The Jets have done a great job in terms of shot blocking, collapsing, and not giving very much. And, man, I mean, again, we've been on this stretch for so long, and Connor Hellebuyck has been really excellent. 70 of 71, and it's not just that. The issue right now that some people are facing is that, and I said it myself, I don't think that Connor Hellebuyck necessarily has stolen both of these games. because it's not a one-man show, but he makes the excellent save look routine. So everyone is thinking, well, you know, where are the highlight reel saves? Yes, there was the combo platter with Draisaitl's spinorama backhand and then the Darnell Nurse double left pad save there, much like Mike Smith on Kyle Connor. But, I mean, Hellebuck has been so positionally sound, and the other thing that has stood out is his ability to fight through the screens and the traffic. The Oilers kind of took advantage of the Jets in that area with an Alex Chiasson and with certain other players getting to that blue paint in the regular season. Right now, the Jets are doing a better job of both clearing the front of the net, boxing out, and Hellebuck is finding pucks through screens and tips, and he just is a man on a mission. And he was sick and tired of hearing how the Oilers lit him up during the year for 26 goals and how they were the only team that he had a sub-900 save percentage against. And we know how Connor Hellebuck operates. When the guy at the other end of the ice is the one being talked about in many markets as a Vezina candidate, and all of a sudden people are wondering how Connor Hellebuck somehow went to 916, well, his 916, not all numbers are created equally, as we know, in terms of how the Jets defended during the regular season. It just wasn't as solid, and C-Mac is right. The poke check on Draisaitl was a very important play on what was one of those rare miscues by Paul Stastny. That, I think, was more a great play by Draisaitl to bat it out of the air, but that's a turnover you don't see very often. And Hellebuck was quick on the attack to get the stick down, and he's just playing with so much confidence right now. I know some Oilers fans are saying, well, Mike Smith has to be better. I'm sorry, three goals in two games? You don't have to be better.
Pretty good.
Mike Smith must feel like he's back on the Flames, where he's been their best player in the playoffs, and they're losing to Colorado, and people are saying, well, can we get another goalie in here? Can we get Markstrom? Are you kidding me? Like, what else do you want the guy to do? How about wake up some of those depth forwards? Wake them up if they want to have a chance in this series. And boy, oh boy, all of a sudden, you guys see it as well. The frustration and the body language from Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. You see sheer and utter frustration. I saw this in the bubble last year in Edmonton when I was there for that series against Chicago, and this is a different type of game. The Blackhawks weren't playing a stifling checking game. Corey Crawford was kind of channeling his inner Smythe Division goaltender, just making maybe one more save than the guy at the other end. But you see the frustration with the Oilers, and I'll be very curious. I expect them to come out heavily. And this is the other part. We talk about experience. The Jets were in the Oilers' shoes against St. Louis. After dropping those first two games in Winnipeg, most people thought it was case closed, sayonara, you can see you later, these guys are finished. But all of a sudden that series was 2-2, and then the Jets had an opportunity to go up 3-0, and no one likes hearing about it, but Kevin Hayes doesn't knock his own goal out of the net while being tackled by Colton Parayko. I believe that there could be some historical rewrites required to steal that line from Connor Hellebuck. Certainly not suggesting the Jets would have won the Cup that year, but that was the best they had played. And that's where the parallel is, guys. They stumbled down the stretch that year, too, after being in first place in the division for most of the year, but they played their best hockey when they got Josh Morrissey back, when Dustin Byfuglien was closer to being healthy, and after all the turmoil that they went through, they found a better game until Game 6, where they were dominating.
The wheels fell off.
Yeah.
And Kenny, just going back to the goaltending, and I realize, it's going to depend a lot on what happens in Game 3, but, people are talking about it in the chat. I imagine, people were talking about it in the chat on last night's Kenny and Rennie post-game show, and, we're going to be talking about it a lot. But, I mean, what do you see happening with the goaltending? Because I mentioned this yesterday. Like, I think this is a huge advantage for the Jets and Hellebuck. Nobody played more than Hellebuck this year. We know that, he can easily play back-to-back. Not saying that, Mike Smith can't, because he's proven that he's the ageless wonder. But, again, like, let's say that, it's a regulation game in Game 3. Do you think there's a good chance that we will see Hellebuck, Smith back-to-back, or do you think it's more likely that, Edmonton might go to Mikko Koskinen, especially if, Smith lets in 3 or 4 goals?
Yeah, for me, I expect to see the starters in both of those games. No guarantees, of course, because you have a 39-year-old veteran, but I think that Mike Smith knows that his team's best chance to win is with him between the pipes, and unless there is a physical ailment, we know that he had some issues down the stretch, but he was able to play through them. I don't expect we would see Koskinen unless Smith struggles. And as, in terms of Hellebuck, this has nothing to do with Lauren Brossoit. The Jets are confident in their backup, but Connor Hellebuck will have the net unless something incredibly odd happens. Back-to-backs, so we understand what the numbers suggest, but there's no travel here. It's not crazy taxing. Yes, he's had a lot of shots, 71 shots, but he's not facing the same type of offensive fury that he's used to facing. He had that long break going into the playoffs. He's feeling fresh. I don't think there's any reason to try and protect, in air quotes, if you feel as though you have to. I think Connor Hellebuck will have the net for both of those games unless something incredibly odd happens.
Ken Weeb, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Jets and the Oilers. The Jets with the 2-0 series lead over Edmonton after last night's 1-0 overtime victory for the Jets.
You know, Kenny, there's a lot of players who deserve to be singled out and mentioned for their performances. You mentioned Josh Morrissey, you mentioned Connor Hellebuck. Adam Lowry is a player who it just seems like he's just on right now. He just seems to be giving the Jets that extra foot. Every guy seems to be playing bigger with Adam Lowry right now in the lineup. Is this the Adam Lowry we've come to expect, not necessarily what we saw last year? And just how important is this guy for making sure this Jets team can keep this thing rolling?
Yeah, he's been critical, David, and great assessment there overall. His physical nature, he drives the play in that regard, and that line is really excelling, I think, in this series. And Lowry is the guy leading the charge. Mason Appleton back to doing his net driving. He's gained some confidence. He went through that long drive spell late in the year, then got hot late. Now he's found a way to get to the net using his speed. And I've been impressed with Matthew Perreault's ability to create chaos and get under the skin of the opponent. You know, lots of back and forths. Two big things when it comes to Lowry. His willingness to engage with Darnell Nurse has been massive. And Darnell Nurse is a guy who got physical with the Jets in that regular season series where they dominated to the tune of 7-2 and won the last six meetings. Lowry's going head-to-head. Yes, they fought during the year, but Lowry was missing for a significant portion of that series against the Oilers, and they've missed him. I think that Lowry's playing great. He played very similarly against Calgary last year in the bubble, and Lowry will deliver some big goals before this series is over. That's just the way that he plays. He loves this time of the year, and this is why the Jets made that commitment to him before the Seattle expansion draft, and it's a smart move. I mean, this is a guy they needed to keep around, and I understand why some fans said, well, just sign him afterward. No, that needed to be taken care of immediately. It was taken care of, and he will continue to show his value in terms of what he brings to the table. The Jets don't have another player like him. That, yes, they don't have another player like Mark Scheifele either, but Adam Lowry is the type of guy who flourishes when the games matter the most. He's a great leader. He does a lot of things that the Jets don't have an abundance of, and they needed to lock him up, and that's why they did.
Kenny, last question for you, because we know we got the Jets media availability coming up in about 10 minutes' time. You know, I go back to the opening faceoff of last night's game, McDavid versus Scheifele. And, you know, Scheifele, you know, is not typically a guy that you think of when you think of, you know, any extracurriculars or any sort of physical or edge to his game more often than not. But the Mark Scheifele I'm watching in these first two games is a Mark Scheifele who may have been a little bit sick of reading all the headlines about Connor McDavid. And he seems like he's playing with more intensity than you typically see from the Winnipeg Jets centermen.
Yeah, it's been impressive. And he's also invited a lot of that comparison. So, I mean, some of that is definitely on him. I don't think this is a media creation. He is openly welcomed, and you're not suggesting that. I know that some other people are. So I think that it's hard to measure up against Connor McDavid. That's what I wrote earlier this week. I mean, when a guy scores 105 points in 56 games, basically every other player in the National Hockey League doesn't measure up to him. And when the spotlight is on and they've go to head-to-head and it hasn't gone well and you end up in some of those highlights for the Oilers, of course that should tick you off and you want to do something about it. I thought that Scheifele's been solid through the first two games. I think that he's been you know, rely or focusing more on the defensive side of the game. Yes, I think he should have buried that 3-on-1, but it's a lot easier to bury the 3-on-1 from your couch. I mean, he's shooting to score there, and it fires over the net. I think we've all been there at certain levels where you wish you had that one.
Only in mini sticks against my kids, Kenny.
Exactly. But there's still some bar downs that you attempt that go a little bit high and wide. Shifley was, I thought he was better in game two, even better in game two than in game one. I think there was a little bit of coast in his game, but I don't think that was a lack of effort necessarily. It's when you're kind of on your heels playing against Connor McDavid, you know that you have to be aware at all times. I thought his engagement level was even higher in game two, using his speed to his advantage. And also, too, I got to mention Blake Wheeler, guys. Blake Wheeler's been excellent since getting healthy. He's brought the Blake Wheeler attitude to the party, and when Blake Wheeler is playing at his best, he has that edge not only on the ice but in some of his media dealings. That's just part of his personality, and yeah, you know, some folks don't like it, but that's part of him. He uses the Michael Jordan approach of creating energy and internal combustion and all those sorts of things, but he's got his feet back, and he is engaged, and he is playing a very responsible game. And when that happens, Mark Scheifele follows the lead of Blake Wheeler. And when those two guys are rolling along with Kyle Connor, the Jets can be a very dangerous team. And I still think that Mark Scheifele will have a cementing moment in this series, where I wrote that right now Connor Hellebuck's the only one on the marquee. I think Mark Scheifele will be making room for himself on the marquee if the Jets are able to keep this up and knock the Oilers out of the playoffs.
Ken Wiebe covers the Winnipeg Jets for Sportsnet. You can see him on television with our buddy Sean Reynolds. You can read his work on Sportsnet.ca. And, of course, after each and every Winnipeg Jets game, the Kenny and Rennie post-game show and their pre-game show on Instagram 45 minutes before puck drop. So if you can't get enough of Kenny, really, you know, you don't have to look hard. You don't have to look high and hard
enough
to find
Kenny.
Him.
Love it. Yeah. Kenny's the best.
And before I go, guys, Dave and Ezzy, I do feel your pain. And Drew, thank you for not treating me like I am a peon. So I know that you're the Howard Stern of this show. I also want to say, guys, you're doing a fantastic job, and thank you for your additional promotion. You guys are doing a great job. We're piggybacking one another as best we can here in these playoffs in terms of those post-game shows. It's always a pleasure being with you and talking hockey and breaking things down and just generally having some laughs and some fun, and keep up the excellent work here.
Likewise, Kenny. Be well, buddy. There you go. Ken Wiebe off to join the Winnipeg Jets media conference. The Jets head coach Paul Maurice and Andrew Kopp will be available in about, just 10 minutes time, give or take. We'll see anything interesting that comes out of that. We'll bring it to you live here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's take our first break. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Oilers, of course. We're also going to get the Oilers' perspective in about 30 minutes time from Derek Van Deest of Post Media. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. We're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning, a little bit before 10 o'clock. Good morning to everybody. So nice to see so many of you in the chat. A rainy, shelter-in-place kind of weekend here in Winnipeg. Illegal Curve's got you covered for all your Jets talk. We got the Illegal Curve Hockey Show right now. We'll have all the media availability on IllegalCurve.com throughout the course of the day. Tomorrow's pregame skate, that'll be covered, of course, and then game time, 6:30 tomorrow here on our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, and then the post-game show tomorrow night and Monday night. So certainly going to be a very busy time for all Winnipeg Jets coverage and for us here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Want to welcome aboard as a sponsor, Lynn's Heating, Cooling, Sewer, and Drain. With playoff hockey here, your friends at Lynn's are giving you another reason to cheer for the Jets. Every time the Jets score a goal, Lynn's will take 10% off an AC or furnace tune-up the next day for Winnipeg residents. Lynn's is a team of local Winnipeg HVAC contractors dedicated to providing you with comfort at your door so you can watch the Jets' quest for the Cup. For more information, check them out online, lynnswinnipeg.ca.
So that means today you'd be entitled to a 10% discount.
That's right. You know, clearly the Lins, the smart business people that they are, knew that it was going to be a low-scoring series, so that's why they decided to put that promotion into effect. The Jets, of course, anytime they every goal they score, you get that percentage off, or that percentage times 10 off in terms of your next day service with Lins. Be sure to let them know that the Illegal Curve guys sent you to Lins. More information, linswinnipeg.ca. Are we expecting Nikolaj Ehlers to be back in the lineup tomorrow? If you guys were putting on your prognostication hats, and I don't expect Paul Maurice to necessarily be forthcoming with an answer when he meets with the media in the next 20 or so minutes, but do you expect that Nikolaj Ehlers will be back in the Jets lineup tomorrow?
There's a 0% chance, sorry, I just want to jump in. There's a 0% chance that Paul Maurice will be forthright in his availability. I mean, he's not going to say anything about whether – he's not going to say anything about tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, I mean he'll be asked. And he will answer in no terms that will be give you any insight as to what his lineup will be. So, Paul Maurice is a veteran coach for a reason, and he is certainly not going to give away the status of Nikolaj Ehlers to Dave Tippett, allow him the game plan. He's going to leave that up until, in fact, I mean, it's a little different now because, people will be at the arena being able to watch, but we don't know. I mean, they may not have a full skate tomorrow. They've been doing these optionals, so it's entirely possible that they don't necessarily do a full skate tomorrow, even though they were off today, so maybe they will. We'll see. But if they don't, Paul Maurice may have to leave everybody waiting till what time is puck drop tomorrow? 6 o'clock?
6:30. So it'll be closer to 6:40. Yeah.
Yeah, so around 6 o'clock when the warm-up starts is when you may actually find out whether Nikolaj Ehlers is actually in the lineup or not.
Yeah, exactly right. But
yeah, I agree 100%, yeah.
So let's assume he's back. How does that impact the Jets forward group? You know, Nikolaj Ehlers comes back into the lineup. How do you deploy the Jets forwards for game three and certainly possible game four the next day, assuming, no injuries or things of that nature occur in game three? So what's your strategy? You're Paul Maurice. How do you slot Ehlers in? How does that affect the rest of your lineup?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll let Dave, go after me, obviously, but, we know Ehlers is going to slot in on that second line. There's no doubt about that. And I think, Drew, what you really want to know is kind of like, how does that affect, the third and fourth lines? And, we knew that when Pierre-Luc Dubois came back into the lineup, there was a good chance it was going to be Christian Vesalainen, right, Dave? Because Dave was mentioning this, towards the end of the season. It made a lot more sense to have Vesalainen in a scoring role on the second line as opposed to being more of a kind of in a checking role on the fourth line, which we obviously know that two of those three players play on the penalty kill in Thompson and Lewis. But I think the obvious one is that Andrew Kopp comes down to the third line, and then you go back to good old reliable, as I said on the post game show last night, right? Kopp, Lowry, Appleton on the third line, and then it'll be kind of interesting, guys, to see It goes back to what we were talking about during the regular season, right? Like, is Paul Stastny going to stay up the middle and Dubois? Like, is the line going to be Ehlers, Stastny, Dubois? I think there is a good chance you see that. And considering, guys, that Dubois obviously is still playing through something, right? Like, we don't know exactly what it is, but it's clear that he's not 100% healed, right? I think we would all agree with that. But then, we know that a lot of guys are probably playing through something. It was just revealed, by Kevin Sawyer not too long ago that earlier in the regular season, Wheeler was playing with cracked ribs. So we know hockey players and athletes in general play through injuries, but that would kind of be my best guess, Drew. I mean, we know Ehlers isn't going to play in the bottom six, but I think the real question is, is Stastny going to stay up at the middle with Dubois on the wing? And are you going to have Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton together? And then probably Dominic Toninato is the guy I imagine that comes out of the lineup, not Matty Perreault, but it would probably be between Perreault and Toninato, in my opinion.
Dave?
Well, I mean, I think it'll always be like first one and first last or whatever that expression is. I think Toninato. Yeah.
First in, first out.
That's right.
Last in, first out.
Yeah, there you go.
LIFO.
Yeah.
I did get an A in financial accounting at University of Winnipeg, so, and that didn't turn out too well for me, but still. Yeah, I got an A. That was my only A. The rest were F, so.
Yeah. Doesn't quite balance out the same.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I think you're more likely to see Matthew Perreault, and I think there'll be a little bit of a reshuffling, to get Ehlers up to that top line and, second line. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, right? Because do you keep you drop Andrew Kopp down. I think that's the whole versatility of Andrew Kopp, right? And that's what we've talked about, that idea of him being a Swiss Army knife, a guy who's able to kind of adapt to wherever he's put. And we know Matthew Perreault can play on the fourth line. And that's, I think, the advantage that Paul Maurice has had this season is that these guys all have that, quote, muscle memory to play with each other. There's no a lack of familiarity with most of these guys. You know, whether it's Matthew Perreault, a guy who can jump up and down your lineup, going and playing with Trevor Lewis and Nate Thompson, Andrew Kopp going back to that familiar role with Mason Appleton and Adam Lowry, and then really having that second line, that's the big question mark. If you've got the first line who's playing, you know, well and is more than handling what they're having thrown at them, then the question mark becomes, well, what do you do with the Stastny, Ehlers, Dubois line, which we all seem to think that is where things will go with this Jets team. And the one thing I think we're seeing from Paul Maurice is, in terms of ice time, is if you look, Adam Lowry played more ice time than the Stastny line. Not in total, but Adam Lowry did, obviously, because of special teams. And I think there's one of those, that balance, right? There's that second and third line aren't really necessarily showing that, hey, we're a clear-cut second line, we're a clear-cut third line. And I think having that ability to ease in Ehlers and Dubois, knowing that you have the depth to roll and the confidence to roll Lowry's line or the confidence to roll Thompson's line, knowing that you've got a guy like Matty Perreault, who's such a smart hockey player, I think will allow them to ease that line together. But I think that's probably the way things will go. And again, we don't know what it's going to look like with Nikolai Ehlers in terms of whether he plays or not. We know he got out of the non-contact uniform yesterday, and as Paul Maurice described it, was banging on the glass to get back into the lineup. And look, hockey players want to play hockey. They don't want to be hurt, and they don't want to be on the shelf. So we know that Nikolai Ehlers is probably desperate to get going. But, you know, he had an injury that didn't affect his skating. It affected his shooting, right? And he wasn't shooting for some time. Now he's in there. He's in full contact. But if you're Paul Maurice, you've enjoyed the luxury of being able to get a player like Nikolai Ehlers more rest and more health and more time off. So we'll see, because to your point, Drew, and you made it earlier in the show, and I think it's a good one, you have a back-to-back. So do you allow Ehlers to have that one extra day, especially knowing that he's going to have to go back the next night? Or do you throw him in to kind of supercharge your lineup and say, listen, like, we've got a chance to step on the Ehlers' throats here. Let's get up 3-0.
If he's healthy and he's ready, and by all accounts it certainly sounds like it, you're going to see him in the lineup. There's no, I don't see any advantage to really be playing the 3D chess game of holding him out until game four to supercharge your lineup in game four, or to, you know, considering the back-to-backs or anything like that. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers, you know, will be in the lineup when he's ready, you know, full stop. And if that's tomorrow, and I sort of expect that it will be, then you'll see him in the lineup, and the Jets will reap the rewards of being able to go with that kind of depth up and down your lineup. Good morning to our buddy Frank Zappia joining us in the chat room on this Saturday morning. Good morning to all of you joining us in the chat room on this Saturday morning. You are live and listening and watching and chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Look, we talked about it in the first hour of the show. The Jets forwards last night, I mean, I'm looking at it, if I can squint well enough and see the numbers, Mark Scheifele led all Jets forwards last night playing 22:58. The lowest among the Jets forwards was, I believe, Dominic Toninato at 8:34. That's a very reasonable balance of your forwards. And that is going, you're not going to necessarily see the reap the rewards of that in game one and game two. But I think in game three, and particularly in game four on the back-to-back, if the Jets are still able to keep those numbers and the time on ice for their forward group, you know, at that reasonable, you know, in that reasonable range where you don't have guys up at the 27, 28, 29 minutes. I mean, those are crazy minutes, and I know that you can play them, but there has to be an impact on them because these guys aren't robots. I mean, McDavid last night, 26:45. Almost 20, over 22 and a half minutes of that at even strength. And then you look at Dreisaitl. I mean, Dreisaitl, I'm actually surprised that it was such a disparity between him and McDavid. You know, Dreisaitl has over 30 minutes, and they each played the same amount on power play. So Dreisaitl,
was that Chris Pronger in a Leon Dreisaitl jersey? Like, those are Pronger types of numbers. Like, you guys remember 2006 when Edmonton went on that playoff run, right? Obviously Pronger was on the ice half the time, And you mentioned that in the post-game show, Drew, like it can't be that high. It just can't. And obviously, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid, considering that it doesn't look like too many guys right now on the Oilers are firing on all cylinders. Like, you know, Weaver mm-hmm. mentioned this, like James Neal looked like a moving pylon out there. Like, well, I realize Neal's had
anything from James Neal at this point in his career.
But that's my point, right? Like, you know, you can't expect a lot out of that bottom six. Like, the top six is solid, right? Like, Dominic Cahoon, I don't think is you know, a player.
Cahoon played, if I recall correctly, I think I saw this on
Twitter. He didn't play a lot.
He played, I believe, 8 seconds or something like that. He had maybe a shift or two shifts after the midway point of the second period. He was
43 total.
Yeah, he was benched for, I think, most of the third period and a lot of the second period. Him and Ryan McLeod each were benched for a significant period of time. So you have an Oilers team that just doesn't have the depth of the Winnipeg Jets.
And now, Ryan McLeod is a rookie, right? But you're right. I mean, they don't. And it's more so, you know, Cahoon is a guy that's got speed and skill, but he's got to be creating offense out there, right, Dave? Like, Cahoon's a guy on Chicago that, like, you know, he put up good numbers. So he's not a guy that really has an impact if he's not you know, creating something. And Puljujarvi's been good. I think you can make the argument, you know, Puljujarvi's been one of their best forwards, if not their best forward, right?
I think he's been better than Draisaitl and McDavid. I mean, he's been, at least
I wouldn't disagree with that. He's been very, and you can tell a guy like Puljujarvi, right? Like, let's not forget, guys, back in 2016, it wasn't between Laine and Dubois. It was between Laine and Puljujarvi. And obviously Puljujarvi struggled big time, you know, early on in his career, and he probably, you know, shouldn't have been in the NHL as early as he was, right? But he just wasn't as ready as Laine. Yeah, absolutely. And so your point is well taken, Drew. Like, Draisaitl and McDavid, especially Draisaitl, probably playing, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes longer. But
Dominic Cahoon had 3 shifts total between the third period and overtime, and he was on the ice for the Jets' winning goal in overtime. So obviously Dave Tippett was not happy with the performance of Dominic Cahoon last night and you know, showed it by benching him basically for the entirety of the third period. Then he puts him on the ice for overtime, and what happens? He gets scored on. Not that it was Dominic
That's what
Cahoon's
I didn't
fault.
Get, Drew. I noticed that, and I'm thinking to myself, like, Cahoon hasn't played very well tonight. He wasn't really good in game one, so why is he out there in overtime? And obviously, you know, McDavid, Draisaitl, you know, Nugent Hopkins, the Oilers' top players, they can't be out there for every shift, even though it looked like Tippett tried to have Draisaitl out there for every shift. But, you know, it's significant, and people might be saying, you know, like, why are we talking so much about ice time? Well, because it's ridiculous that Draisaitl played 30 minutes, because as you mentioned, it's not like this was a double OT game. It was a 4-minute OT game. So I think, you know, Tippett is going to have to be a little bit more careful, you know, with how he plays his big guns. I do agree with Weber. I think Draisaitl and McDavid are going to be split up. And going back to, you know, what Frank Zappia said, I think that it's a good point, because, you know, why not put Dubois on that third line and reward Andrew Kopp, who's probably had, you know, a very underrated series. He's been really solid, right? Like, we know that, you know, Kopp is a guy can play on the penalty kill, and he's just solid. He with his skating and his physicality, he's just an all-around solid player. So I agree. I mean, why not go with, you know, Kopp, Ehlers, and Stastny on that second line? Who knows if it'll happen, but I agree with Frank. I could see it having good results.
You know, the Jets are at the advantage of with getting last change now, where they can put some of their skill players, and there's a ton of skill players on this team, especially if Ehlers is back in the lineup, they can put some of their skill players against the Oilers' depth forward groups. And it's certainly going to be more, it should be more one-sided than it is when the Oilers' top guys go against the Jets, you know, depth players. We saw it last night. You know, there were a number of shifts. Now, I wouldn't recommend doing this on a regular basis, but there were a number of shifts where Thompson and Toninato and Lewis were up against the McDavid and Draisaitl line. And, you know, personally, I was holding my breath a lot during those shifts, because that's not an ideal matchup, but they acquitted themselves perfectly reasonably. And if it's the flip side that you might see often now with the Jets having last change, if it's the Connor Scheifele Wheeler line, or if it's Ehlers or Dubois or whomever it is against the bottom of the Oilers forward group, well, that's going to be a significant advantage for the Jets, and one that they should be able to really control those shifts for you know, however many seconds or minutes at a time, Dave.
I think what it comes down to is something we talked about going into this series, was that the Jets' depth is there, whereas for the Oilers, it isn't. And if the Oilers don't have McDavid and Draisaitl dominating, because the Jets have not necessarily completely nullified them, but have eliminated a lot of their what they do, then the Oilers are going to be in trouble. And Mike Smith deserves commending based on how he's played. He's been very good for this Edmonton Oilers team. At the end of the day, they just don't seem to be getting it from, you know, when you can get goals from Dominic Toninato and Tucker Pullman, and the Oilers aren't similarly seeing that. And when Connor Hellebuyck is as dialed in as the way Connor Hellebuyck is, I find it hard to think of, and when you're Dave Tippett, you have the advantage of home ice, which is supposed to be your big play, and you're not getting it because, again, the Jets are doing what they needed to do defensively as a collective group. And that I think is going to be the storyline, regardless of how things play out, regardless of who wins tomorrow and ultimately who wins the series. But I think the storyline for this Winnipeg Jets team is the collective buy-in that we didn't necessarily see. And I really do think it goes back to Paul Stastny's words. And I think there's been a lot mentioned about that, right? That what he talked about in terms of, you know, after that 6-1 loss and what he said publicly. I mean, this is a guy, he's not a guy playing his 100th NHL game, right? We saw him play his 1,000th NHL game. So I think this is a guy who, when he speaks, people listen. And when he's talking about people not all pulling the rope in the same direction, he didn't use that word, but that's mine. But that's mine used from a different media availability with a different player. But when everybody's pulling on the rope in the same direction,
you know,
it's funny. It's what Pascal Vincent said in our end of season roundtable. He talked about the Jets, the Moose team, and he said you had 20 players, but you had which means you had 40, you know, sets of arms, 40 sets of legs, but you had one heart. Everybody was playing with a lot of heart together as a collective group. And I think that's what we're seeing from this Jets team, which we hadn't seen earlier in the season.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.